we have Jürgen Schäffer, who will give the first presentation. Jürgen is coming from the University of Hamburg. He's working on climate change and conflicts, and he's a member of ELAS Council, and he will give us, immediately when we solve the technical problem, he will give us the first presentation. www.enesglobalonword.ines.
That's the link to climate change and conflict. That's an issue that came up about 2 years ago in 2007 because there were several events happening. It was the report that came out by the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change. There was the Nobel Peace Prize for the IPCC and for Al Gore. And there were a number of studies in that year that suggested that climate change will be a security risk, that it will lead to more conflict, and may even lead to climate wars. And there were some books that were entitled like that. And as you will see, it's not that simple, because it can be one or the other way. I have some questions that I think are relevant in this regard, and I want to mention that question because I want to make you think about it. The first question is, are natural resources a relevant conflict factor? A second question, which regions will be affected by global environmental change? And will climate change lead to more societal instability and even violent conflict, or possibly to more cooperation? That's the other route. That depends certainly on how human beings respond to climate change and which strategies societies will take. And that's the reason I think we are here in Copenhagen, because the hope is we will avoid these conflicts related to climate change, because we will find cooperative approaches and cooperative strategies to solve the problem before it occurs, and maybe also adapt with cooperative approaches to the problems that occur as a result of climate change. If you look at the temperature curve over time, you will see, as you all know, it's rising, and depends a little on the scenario that you choose. Will we end up with 2 degrees, 5 degrees, 7 degrees, or even more within this century, which might be the worst case? And what will this be? What will this mean for societies? And one of the most important factors, that it's somewhat proportional to the temperature rise, is sea level rise, because this affects the coastal regions and the people living in these. And these are millions of people that might be affected, that live along the coast. So I have drawn a nice map which shows you all the climate risks at once. Even though climate change is a global phenomenon, the different risks are local and regional, and they're quite different. They're quite asymmetric in the different parts of the world. It ranges from floods to storms to droughts to the effect on biodiversity and water, food, and all these things which you heard, and the migration of people. And the question is how they are interrelated and how will societies address these problems. So for me, the key question is, again, will climate change lead to more security risks and instabilities and conflicts, or will mankind be able to make the turn towards cooperation, because human beings are able to solve problems and think ahead of problems and are able to avoid them, but they cannot solve them alone. They require societal responses. That depends on the way human beings interact with each other. And it can be in a conflicting mode, or it can be in a cooperative mode. So, regarding the conflicting mode, it's worth looking at the studies and what these studies have suggested that came out in the last 2 years. And the UN General Secretary suggested that climate change may be as bad as war. And there was a study by former admirals and generals in 2007. They suggested that climate change would be a threat multiplier. It's using the term threat. And it says that climate change combines different factors that are threatening to human beings, and that could lead to military responses, it could lead to extremism, it could lead to terrorism, to violence in general. There was a comprehensive study in the same year by the German Advisory Council on Global Change, and that was a little more differentiated. It suggested, on the one hand, climate change can lead to more destabilization and violence. On the other hand, it can lead to the more cooperative climate change, climate policy. If the problems are not solved, then it is most likely that climate change will lead to a division in the international system, in particular aggravating the division between North and South, Because the poor people will be those that will be most affected by climate change, and those are the ones also that are the least responsible. So that raises the issue of climate justice. And the question is whether that will lead to, in the long run, to an aggravated conflict between North and South. We still can solve it, and the question is in which way. In the worst case, it may lead to a situation where nuclear weapons could spread, and nuclear weapons could contribute to the risk of nuclear war in a situation where countries fight for their resources. And there was an interesting quote by Jonathan Schell, who has written a lot about the risk of nuclear war, and he suggested that there might be indeed a link between nuclear weapons and global warming. He said, "The two perils have a great deal in common. Both are the fruit of swollen human power. In the one case, the destructive power of war. In the other, the productive power of fossil fuel energy. But those stakes on the table of a magnitude never presented before in human decision-making. Both threaten life on a planetary scale, and both require a fully global response." So he's comparing the two major risks of nuclear war and global warming and how they may be related in the future. There are many possible connections between these two threats. Just to mention, if you increase nuclear power as a response to global warming, you also increase the possibility of proliferation of nuclear weapons. So looking at the data, you cannot draw a simple message from comparing temperature rise with the increase of conflict. Oh, it's on. It's also what major war that matters here. War between states, but also war on a sub-state level, civil war or violence between societal groups. And this you see in this term, which also looks at low-level conflict, not just war. And you see another thing you can look at is an existing conflict over the last 25 years, and you see that many of these conflicts had indeed an environmental component. This is based on a study from the Adelphi Research in Berlin, and it's found that in 72 cases, environment had a role to play in conflict. In Africa, this is mostly blue and brown. This means water and soil or food play a role in the conflict. In other parts of the world, such as East Asia, there could be fishery as an issue, or in Latin America, biodiversity could be an important conflict factor. So the German Advisory Council has looked at major conflict constellations that may be relevant in the future. One is water, one is food, one is natural disasters such as floods and storms, and the fourth one is migration as a factor. And these, as you see here, could contribute each of themselves, but also in their combination to conflict, because water and food are related, and water and food could lead to more migration, and storms could lead to more migration and affect water and food. So they're all interrelated with each other. And in their combination, they could lead to so-called hot spots, where various conflict factors interrelate with climate change, as you see here in the different regions. Africa has many hotspots that are related to water and food, but Latin America and Central America and East Asia, storms and floods are more important. If you look at the existing situation, you see that are already areas in the world with extreme climatic conditions. The red ones are areas with droughts, the yellow ones are areas with storms, the blue ones extreme precipitation, and gray ones is glacier melting. So this is the upper part, is the existing situation. With climate change, there will be more situations with extreme climatic conditions, and these add to the existing ones. So you have more areas in the world with extreme climatic conditions in which life becomes more difficult and the areas become uninhabitable. Just look at water as one conflict factor. The projection from the IPCC is that there will be, from now, about 1 billion people affected by water. That could increase, in the worst case, to 6 or 7 billion people. That's the worst case. That's the red curve. If we make the turn, the green and blue one, it may be still increasing to 2 to 3 billion people will be affected by water crisis. So the key question now is water more a factor of conflict or more of cooperation? And that has been a discussion since the 1990s that was undecided, because in some cases water has contributed to conflict, in others water has led to more cooperation, because the water cooperation agreements have actually also increased. That means if there is a problem, the solution also increases. There is a competition between these different trends, at least for the water.
Much easier.
Did you hear me still? Before? Okay. Another issue is food, and you see food is affected by temperature change, which is the lower, the horizontal axis here, go from 1 to 6 degrees, and this is just one example is how wheat is reduced. The wheat yield is reduced with increasing temperature. Maybe a loss of wheat yield from 40 to 60%. So the crops are very sensitive in their yield regarding temperature change. And this combined with the fact that also there's a loss of arable land in the world. So this could lead to possible food insecurities and food crisis. We had already a food crisis last year with some demonstrations against it, and that will certainly aggravate if there is a temperature rise. This looks like a complex diagram, and it actually shows two things. One is the fraction that developing countries depend on agriculture, which is the red bars. And these are the different countries. For instance, many African countries depend for more than 40% on agriculture. These are also the poorest countries, as you see from the black curve, which shows you the total gross domestic product of these countries. So these are inverse curves. High dependence on agriculture in the current world means low income or poverty. And low dependence on agriculture means higher income. So the problem with that is that climate change affects agriculture stronger than countries that depend on industry. So the poor and developing countries are more vulnerable because of their dependence on agriculture and the low income and the low adaptive capacities. And one of the most affected areas in the world will be, as you may guess, Africa. You see a distribution of existing environmental conflicts in Africa, and they all combine water and food scarcity. There was a very new study that came just out 3 weeks ago in a scientific journal that came up with a headline that said, "Warming increases the risk of civil war in Africa." And it's an empirical study that looks at how in previous cases environmental factors contributed to conflict in Africa, and it's extended it in the model into the future, to the year 2030. And it suggests that could lead to a 50% increase of conflict in Africa if the current models projecting a temperature rise in Africa. And this is a distribution from that same publication that looks at the statistical correlation on the left-hand side for precipitation and temperature rise, and on the right-hand side the increase of conflict. And they see a clear statistical link that could lead to several hundreds of thousands of people more killed in these conflicts in the future. This is one of the first empirical studies that suggests such a link. I can mention a few case studies here as far as time permits, just very short. But very often you see Sudan mentioned, Darfur Sudan as a case. Of course, the conflict is very complex. There's a lot of factors that shape that conflict. The environment is just one of them. And the question that has been discussed in a study by the United Nations Environmental Programs, that there is a link because of that conflict between herders and farmers in Sudan, as it is in many other parts of North Africa. Because the desert is moving, that means the herders are moving into areas of farmers, and it aggravates the situation between them and distorts traditional stability between these groups. That doesn't mean that Sudan was caused by it, it's only aggravated by that. Another conflict that may become more relevant in the future is the Nile Basin area, and that connects a lot of countries in North and East Africa. And the problem is that the projections say that there will be less water available along the Nile River. But the second problem is that there will be, with sea level rise, more water coming into the delta. And that makes the living for the people in the rural areas more difficult, and they either have more conflict with each other or move into urban areas. and aggravate the situation there. Keep in mind that, for instance, Cairo is already a very densely populated city. The Mediterranean area is another area that's very prone to droughts and lack of water. What you see from this diagram here is the increase of droughts, all the brown areas, by the year 2040 to 69. And that interestingly connects industrialized countries, southern Europe, with developing countries in northern Africa. And the question is how they will deal with that problem in the future. Will they develop more cooperative agreements, or will this contribute to more migration and conflict? Central Asia is another area that's politically not very stable and is economically weak and has, as you see, an increase of sandstorms, which are the red areas. Up to 30 days a year are sandstorms. That means it's very hard to grow anything during that period. And there's also the death of the Aral Sea is a typical example for the lack of water in that area. The final point I want to make is the possibility that also the increase of floods, of storms, such as tropical cyclones, could be an issue. It affects also coastal regions, which are very densely populated. And that's East Asia, South Asia, but also Central America and the United States. And these dots show points where in the past these cyclones led to social instability, at least temporarily. These are 13 cases. And the last one is here you see the one in the United States was Hurricane Katrina. Most significant one are those in South Asia, such as in Bangladesh, where the effect of the tropical cyclones had at least temporarily to instability and looting and also conflict about the distribution of assistance mechanisms and the money. This shows you, compares you for Bangladesh, the path of tropical cyclones on the left-hand side as they go into the country, and on the right-hand side the movement of people across the country but also into neighbor countries, which in some cases has led to conflict between groups. Hurricane Katrina has hit the richest country in the world and was unable to deal with this. There was societal instability at least for a couple of days. There was no control in that area, and the country was unprepared to deal with this problem. So it shows that it's not only developing countries that are unable to deal with it, but also developed countries, and that may be a more problem in the future. After Katrina, there was the new term climate refugees was being discussed, because the hundreds of thousands of people had to leave New Orleans or had to stay in that stadium under very bad societal conditions. So there's now a debate on whether climate change will lead to more climate refugees, and there's also a question of how you find the best term. There's the term environmental migrants, that are people that have at least a choice to move, and environmentally displaced people are people who have no choice to move, they are forced to move. And climate refugees are the people who are suffering from the risk of climate change, sea level rise, extreme weather events, and droughts and water scarcity, and they have to move to other parts of the world. And there has been a struggle or a conflict over the question how many climate refugees will be in the future, kind of competition, where's the highest number. There was the number of 200 to 250 million people that came up by Norman Myers in the mid-90s. That was more an estimate than a scientific judgment. The Stern Report has said hundreds of millions of people. Christian Aid says billion people. So these numbers don't say anything really, because you cannot really say how many people will be forced to move as a result of climate change. It's more a competition of numbers. It can be any of these or none. Because the fact whether people migrate under conditions of climate change depends on so many factors that it's very hard to predict. For instance, it depends on the area that will be actually affected by climate change, the intensity of the change, the speed of change, and who is affected, who are the people who are affected in a society, what is their capacity, and how can they adapt, what are their choices. And also, what is the difference between the source region in which they live and the target region? Usually, we'd say people who can make a choice only make move if they think they are better in the new situation or in the new world than in the old one. So it depends on these different factors. Also, there is that triangle relationship between climate change on the one hand that can affect violent conflict, but on the other hand, climate change affects migration. But there is also the link between violent conflict and migration. So there is either a direct link between climate change and migration or an indirect one. Climate change can lead to more conflict, and that leads to more migration. Yes. Okay, I have a couple of lessons here which we can discuss. I just want to mention, we have to look at I see this as a very complex relationship. On the one hand side, left, between climate change, the blue box, green is all the environmental resources that are affected by it. The orange one is all that's dealing with human needs and the impact on human beings. And the fourth one is on the society and its societal stability. And these four boxes are interrelated in a complex way. And it's not just a linear assumption, climate change leads to more societal instability or war, because societies can adapt, human beings can adapt, and they can respond, solving these problems in feedback loops. So this is the whole interrelationship between these four. But the red terms are possible strategies to stabilize that interaction. And I think this is something we have to look in the future, not just what are the bad things that can all happen, but what can we do? And you see that in all parts of that complex relationship, we can have some kind of control mechanisms, strategies, such as emission reduction is the most obvious one. But also would say sustainable development and the transition of the whole society towards an energy system. And it's renewable and sustainable, or the involvement of stakeholders and conflict resolution mechanisms. So, or the fair distribution of resources and climate justice. So these are all the different concepts you see at that conference. But we need to think in the future how they can work with each other to make sure that that interaction is stabilized. So coming back to my diagram, which I showed earlier, but you didn't see it, is climate change increasing. This is the horizontal thing. The red curve is more instabilities and conflict is one option. The green one means more stabilization, more cooperation, and problem solving. And this is the range of actions we have to choose from as human beings. So the final choice is this diagram here. This is the choice that the world is facing. Are we moving towards the upper part of the diagram, which means more environmental destruction, more instability and war, and there are links between these two? Or are we moving to the lower part, the green part here, sustainable development, emission reduction, peace and security, and the mutual links between peace, security, and environmental and sustainable environment change? So this is, I think, the choice the world has, and this is the choice we all have. Thank you.
Yes, thanks a lot to Jürgen and we listen to all the speakers, and after that you can have questions and all contributions.